free. Has anything changed now?
I don't know if you were on the road.
Sweet liberty.
Sweet
liberty. Or is it a stain of mine? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here with us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday. It is the 4th of April in the year 2007. So, you know what? We're almost halfway through a new year already. We're closer to halfway through than the beginning. And I know that I go on about this, folks, but I don't know about you. It just flies. Anyway, let me share our spiritual message here this evening. This is from A Course in Miracles from the text, page 256. This is very short and very succinct. The cost of giving is receiving. Now that's something to think about, isn't it? The cost of giving is receiving. And it makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it, folks? Given that as we sow, so shall we reap. What goes out comes back. The cost of giving is receiving. So maybe what we want to do is be very, very careful what we're giving, or be alert, pay attention. What is it that we're putting out that we are going to be receiving? And the cost can be very sweet, can it? The receiving. Our guest this evening, ladies and gentlemen, is Greg Kay. Greg was on with us several years ago. I don't know if you all remember when it's kind of died down now, because I think it's pretty well over. Maybe Greg can bring us up to speed on this. When the hullabaloo started about the Southern flag, and they were the ADL and the ACLU, or what is it? Yeah, I think so. American Civil Liberties Union, and all of those organizations were screaming and yelling that that flag had to come down because it was a symbol of hate. And basically, it was a symbol of freedom. That isn't why I brought Greg on with us tonight, but Greg Kay, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And it just occurs to me that maybe you could bring us up to speed, and then we can talk about anything you'd like tonight. You're very, very aware of what is going on, and besides the books you've written, there are many articles that you've put out, and we'll take this anywhere you'd like to take it, although I do want to talk about your book, the one that I had read, and you have a second one going, but can you bring us up to speed as to what the results of that onslaught was several years back, Greg?
It's still the same. The fight still goes on. There's the organizations seem to come together and fall apart, and most of the fighting seems to be done more by individuals and small groups. But we seem to have, if this isn't just Southerners, this is common throughout most nationalist movements in the United States.
You mean as far as what happens to the group?
Yes, they seem to fall apart. There's a Southern movement in particular, but if you look at any of the nationalist movements, there seems to be an inability to say we, and we can only say me. It's always mine. It's never ours. And we seem to look at things as individuals, and when we need to be looking at it as an army with one purpose.
Yeah, and we're not talking a military army necessarily.
No, I'm just speaking as any endeavor I mean, politics is war by other means. It's just war without the guns.
Say that again.
Politics is war without guns.
Huh.
The same principles govern both of them. And to win at a war, you have to have some sort of unity. And so far, the Southern nationalist movement hadn't developed it, and most of the white nationalist movements in the United States haven't developed it.
Well, you know what my thoughts are on that? Well, maybe you could give us your opinion or thoughts or ideas of why that is.
In my opinion, the people aren't desperate enough yet.
When
times get hard, they get desperate. Right now, a lot of people have the same attitude of a man I used to work with. He told me once, as long as you've got food on your table and a roof over your head and money in your pocket, you've got no right to complain about anything that happens. And too many people have that attitude. And then there's a certain risk about getting involved.
Well, it seems to me, Greg, that organizations, so many of the organizations have been formed by provocateurs, if you would.
Yes.
Because when the sleeping giant begins to awaken and people begin to look around and say, what the heck is going on here? Then a group is formed, and many, many sincere people get involved. But I believe that even if that organization is formed by sincere people, it winds up getting infiltrated and it winds up getting destroyed.
We had our own infiltrators when the Southern Party was still up and running.
There you go.
And there's, people seem to come and go. And I actually caught one man wearing a wire during a meeting from the Southern Party of West Virginia.
Wow.
And it's almost a given that these people will be there. Someone told me once when the militia movement was active, he said if you have five people there, three of them will probably be feds.
Yep. And I think probably the militias that were out front that were, really had notoriety, if you would.
Yes.
I believe they were probably started in the first place by the Fed. I think the real ones may not even be known by us. I'm going to mention the militia of Montana. I mean, that wasn't even a militia. I suppose it still called itself that.
I haven't followed the events in Montana for several years.
Well, the militia of Montana is John Trockman and his wife and maybe his nephew. I don't know, but I had my doubts about John Trockman. And when he was quoted, it was either the Washington Post, one of the biggies, the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quoted, John Trockman, who's the leader of the militia of Montana, and he spoke for the American Patriots on our behalf, and it had to do with
Randy Weaver?
Yeah, no, not Randy Weaver, the Murrah Federal Building, Jim McVeigh, when he was allegedly put to sleep forever. John Trockman said that we were all glad to see him get his just punishment. And I said, how dare he? How dare he? He can't speak for me. And besides that, I don't believe that John Trockman really believed that Tim McVeigh was the Murrah Federal Building bomber. But you see, anytime somebody gets mentioned like that and quoted in the mainstream press, as far as I'm concerned, they're part of the program.
Well, I see it as one thing. It's hard for me to say, yes, so-and-so got what he deserved, because if we all got what we deserve, we'd die and go to hell. As a Christian, you got to believe if we all got what we deserve, we'd all die and go to hell.
Why? Would you say that?
Well, I mean, without salvation. On their own merits.
I don't know.
Nobody would want to get what they really deserve.
Well, you know what?
I wouldn't want to get what I deserve.
You know what Jesus said? He said, as we sow, so shall we reap.
Yes.
So if we have in our lives, lived our lives with kindness, with compassion, with honesty, with integrity, I won't make myself, I won't even bring myself into part of that conversation. And there's nowhere that I read in the statements attributed to Jesus that he came here and that he came here and was going to shed his blood for our sins. Jesus said, as you sow, so shall you reap. And I'm just going to make this statement. You can respond if you want, and then we'll drop it, because I am very clear that the Christian religion, I don't even call myself a Christian anymore. I am a follower of Jesus, because I know that the dogma and the doctrine of the church has led people to believe just exactly what you said. I'm just a weak sinner. I'm just a weak sinner. No, I'm not. I am a child of God. And I was created whole and perfectly and wholly perfect. I may not act it, but the potential in me is there, the same as it is in you. And that hogwash about us being born in sin, because allegedly 6,000 or 60 million or whatever years ago, Eve took a bite of an apple, Greg, it just doesn't even compute. It doesn't. And you can respond if you want, and I won't make any other comments, but I'm sorry, I can't just sit and listen to that, because to me it is so ridiculous. But it's the way I see it, religions were made by man. If you take a look in the New Testament, when Jesus was talking to Pontius Pilate, and Pilate asked him if he was a king, he said, "You say I'm a king." He said, "My kingdom is not of this world, and I came into this world for one cause, and that is to bear witness unto the truth." My belief, and I'm not saying I know it, but that he came out of his unfathomable love for us, a spiritual being coming into this third dimensional mess that we find ourselves in, out of truly unfathomable love, to try to open the eyes of people to the lies that were being told 2,000 years ago. It just seems like nothing ever changes. You know what I mean?
Well, my take on it is, obviously I'm coming from a different direction from the direction you are. I'm a Christian. I am not a Judeo-Christian. I think the term Judeo-Christian is a lot like saying kosher hog.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron.
That's matching Antichrist with Christ. But obviously I disagree on your interpretation,
right,
of the scripture, because I taught Sunday school for 7 years in a fundamentalist church, and it's a non-denominational church. But, you know, we can just...
Yeah, we'll try that.
We'll go off all night on that.
Right, we'll get off that. But I felt compelled to respond to that statement rather than just sit and let it pass. Okay, we were talking about, before you said if we all got what we deserve, we'd burn in hell. Okay, what were we talking about before
that? We were talking about McVeigh.
Right. Tim McVeigh. Tim McVeigh, it's pretty clear, was not the bomber. He wasn't. He was probably probably a dupe, as he said right on television. I was duped. Maybe he thought he was involved in a sting operation to catch some whatever. But I mean, it's the proof is there.
Well, he was a handy patsy.
A patsy, yes.
If you look at the way I do, whenever I see some kind of a major man-caused tragedy, first thing I ask myself,
who benefits?
I was a cop at one time, and I asked myself, who had the motive? Who benefits from this?
Right.
You know, now granted, sometimes people do crazy things that nobody benefits from, but a major, well thought out operation like some of the ones going on, you have to ask yourself who benefits.
Right.
And it's not often it's not, it's usually, in fact, not the people who are accused and usually found guilty of doing it.
Like 911.
911, good example. Well, this goes back, forever. I mean, look, the, what started the Spanish-American War?
Yep.
Thinking of the Maine. Which,
Remember the Maine. Yep.
And then, of course, you go to Talking Golf. And
well, then we found out later that the Maine was exploded from within the ship, not outside of it.
Yeah, the Spanish had nothing to do with it.
Right.
That's, I mean, it's just a, it's just the way things are done.
Right.
And what amazes me are the people out there who know the government has lied to them. They know they've lied to them for over 150 years.
Oh, geez, probably.
They've lied to them constantly, and yet every election, oh, we can believe this guy. He's an honest man.
Yeah, I know. Like Ron Paul.
It's like George Wallace said. He said, when it comes to Democrats and Republicans, there ain't a dime's worth of difference between them.
Right. Then he got shot.
Yep. Then he got shot.
Yeah.
Because he was a he became an actual threat to the powers that be.
I'm probably going to do one of our broadcasts on Ron Paul because it just makes me ill how many good and sincere people are jumping on the bandwagon for Ron Paul. And the man is a ringer. You know, if people would stop and think, Greg, first of all, we know what happens to any congressman or senator that steps out of line. They either shoot them out of a plane or put them in prison like
traffic.
Look at George Hansen because he was, you know, talking. And then there's Ron Paul that sits up there and talks about the Fed and talks about, but you know, if people would really listen to him closely, they would hear how politically correct he keeps. He's right to the edge. But yet, there are people jumping on the bandwagon. I'm sorry to hear that Aaron Russo is doing the same thing. I've been tempted in considering getting a hold of Aaron to have him take a look at, you know, really look at Ron Paul. Hell, he voted for he voted for the communist most favored nation status for communist China every time it came up for vote. And I've got the voting list from Washington, D.C., when they voted to give amnesty to, what, about 12 million illegal aliens? Ron Paul voted yes.
Well, see, my I don't know a whole lot about Ron Paul's record, but it's, you know, you see pretty much the same thing. You see people looking back now, and they say, oh, you know, when Ronald Reagan was in office, it was a golden. Ronald Reagan was one of the worst presidents we ever had.
No, well, he's just in the long line of terrible presidents,
yeah,
when you think about it.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a bumper sticker I saw here a while back down in Kentucky. It said, don't blame me, I voted for Jefferson Davis.
Right. And then you wonder about Jefferson Davis. I'm sorry. I got to thinking about this. Wasn't his Treasury Secretary a Jew?
Yes, he was the Judah P. Benjamin. Also, interestingly enough, even though there's no proof to this, Benjamin had been with Davis when he was on the run at the end of the war, when everything was collapsing, for a good while. And just within a couple days, somewhere along those lines, if I recall correctly, he left Davis. And Davis ended up being captured, and Judah P. Benjamin ended up in Europe with the Confederate seal.
There you go.
And you can figure that as it.
Well, see, there you go. Now,
I mean, that's circumstantial evidence. And, you know, I don't know, but it. But you, anytime politics are involved, you hate to say this, but you almost presume dishonesty at times.
Yeah, was Jeff Davis? Was he killed? Was he executed?
No. Jefferson Davis asked for a public trial, and they refused to try him. Instead, they held him in prison for 2 years. They did him a lot like they're doing Ernst Zundel and some of the others. I mean, now they drug him, and they shackled. They kept him in a military prison under constant guard for a couple of years. And finally, he kept demanding the trial. They kept refusing it, and finally, they just let him go.
Well, see, you know, I'm sorry, but I know he's a hero to people in the South, and I do know that the South was right. There's not one iota of doubt in my mind that the Southern states, any state, had the right to secede from the Union.
Well, the thing is, you have to ask yourself now, after it was over with, whether or not both sides lost the war. I mean,
well,
you look at what's happening up your way, up in the North, and we might be different peoples, but the same kind of stuff. I mean, the massive immigration, third world immigration, not where we used to get our immigrants from.
Right.
We're not talking about the people who built the country.
Right.
You know, we're talking. You know, the thing is, to me, okay, when I think Yankee, somebody speaking Spanish or speaking Urdu or something, it's not what I'm thinking about.
Right.
You know, and it's the same thing when people think Southerner. I've had people insist that anybody who lives below the Mason-Dixon line is somehow a Southerner. And it, like they say, it just ain't so.
Yeah. But you know, when we got to talking about the Civil War, the War of Northern Aggression, when we got to talking about on the air, that was an area of my awareness that was totally blank. And I mean, I can remember, you know, studying the war in history in school. I remember in the fourth grade that Abraham Lincoln was my hero. And it is true that they've given us every hero we've ever had. But it was you, when you came on with us and began telling the actual situations that existed and what the northern manufacturers were doing, you know, because they were controlling the U.S. Congress and absolutely economically devastating the southern states.
Nothing ever changes, does it?
No. But I was in shock. I mean, it was a whole history lesson for me. And then I got the book, The South Was Right. And I want to ask you a question. Have you ever read John Jakes' trilogy of the North and South, Love and War? There were three of them.
No, I know. I'm familiar with the book.
Well, let me tell you something. I believe that John Jakes actually knew, you know, the real history of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Because what he, and I read it for a second time. Just because I got tired of reading, you know, all this New World Order stuff when I go to bed at night, so I wanted some bubble gum for my brain. So I started rereading some of my old novels. I always enjoyed historical novels. And that was one that I read that whole trilogy again. And my God, I wound up highlighting places in that book. Because what you see is that behind the scenes, they were getting the radicals, revving them up, and then paying them to get out there and rile up the people to go to war because of slavery, when it had absolutely nothing to do with it. It was a whole brand new, awakening for me in that arena, Greg.
Well, there's never been any more evil done than when people decide to set out to help people by killing other people. I mean, that's the excuse in Iraq today. That's, well, we're helping free those people. I'm like, yeah, you're freeing them from their lives. You know what?
Yeah, well, but it had nothing to do with slavery.
Yeah.
And of course, in school,
slavery was the excuse.
Slavery was on its way out.
It's just, yeah. I mean, it was. We just hadn't figured out yet how to let go. But it would have been gone within another 20 years. Interestingly enough, I came across an article the other day that was published in 1890 in the Century Magazine, and it was talking about the slave trade being alive and well in the African Congo. In 1890, amongst the Africans themselves, one of Stanley's officers, it was either 1885 or 1890, I had the article up here a little bit ago, but it had, one of Stanley's officers was talking about how they needed to suppress it, because unlike slavery in the South or slavery most places, that the slave was somebody to use whenever you needed a human sacrifice. and yet that's not discussed. I mean, these are the people, any slaves that came over here, the way they ran the triad, the triangle, slave triangle, people left either the New England states or Europe. They brought their ships to Africa. They traded rum and, you know, odds and ends, just like they traded the Indians, muskets and mirrors and beads and whatnot. Traded a lot of rum to them for the slaves that the Africans had already captured.
That's right. The Africans.
They brought these slaves down. They brought these slaves down to the coast, and a mixture of people ran these what they called factories on the coast. It was holding pens. They were a mixture of, historically, they were a mixture of Europeans, Jews, and mulattoes.
And what?
Mulattoes.
What's that?
Part black. Part black, part white.
Is that mulatto?
Yeah.
Okay, how did you pronounce it?
Down here we pronounce it mulatto, but...
Mulatto, okay, I just... Okay.
You, like, yeah, me. But they traded this stuff, these people. They took the slaves to the Caribbean, traded them for sugar cane syrup. They took that back up north or back to Europe and made rum with it, and the whole thing went over again. We got almost all of our slaves from the Caribbean. They had already been enslaved to five or six different nationalities and several owners by the time they ever got here.
Wow.
But be that as it may, you have to wonder sometimes about someone's motivation who says, I don't like the way this guy is being mean to this person down here, so we're going to go down here and kill him. I mean, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's the same excuse. That's the only excuse they used in when they invaded Serbia. The Serbs are being mean
right.
to the Kosovars.
Right.
And the thing is, the Kosovars are living in Serbia.
Well, look at
they have their own country right next door, Albania.
Right. And look at Afghanistan. We're going over there because, well, of course, they were allegedly looking for what's his name, Osama bin Laden.
Yep.
But basically. And I know that the people were eating this up because my son-in-law and I, it came to, you know, harsh words about this because he mentioned something about it. And I said, well, we have no right being over there. And he said, what do you mean by that, Mom? He said, my God, do you know how they treat their women? He said, those women, da-da-da, and they have to wear veils over their face. And I said, would you like to live like that, he said, very challenging. I said, no, but you know what? I said, these women were born into that, and it's probably very, I don't remember the word that I'm looking for, to them, to be, they feel naked. But I said, that's not the point. Just because we don't agree with the way that the women are being treated, it gives us no right to be over there. And he literally kind of started pounding his chest. I said, where are you getting your information from, Mikey? The news? Oh, well, I know the news isn't all true, but I know in here. And beat on his chest, and he was that adamant about it, why we were in Afghanistan, because we were going to free those women.
Well, let me ask him this, is while we're freeing the women in Afghanistan, what about the estimated 32,000 white women being raped every year by minorities in this country?
Well, he doesn't know anything about that. He only knows what he sees on the news and the History Channel. The point is, the people buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
They buy into the lies. I did, too, myself, for many years. Although I do have to say that I very seldom watch the news or read a newspaper. And it's probably to my great benefit that I didn't, because it was easy for me, I guess back there in late 70s with the book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, that I didn't have any doubts that what, you know, was in that book was truth. It just,
yep.
I didn't have any doubts. We've been here a half hour already, Greg. we're gonna take a 3-minute break. And when we come back, I'd like for you to tell our listeners about the book, the one that you sent me that I read, and the one that you've got about ready to publish now, or is it published?
It's ready to go. We'll be ready to go April 20th.
Ready to go April 20th.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Okay, we're back. Oh, I think. Yes, we are. Greg? Okay. I wasn't paying attention to the time there, waiting for another commercial. Let's talk a little bit. Tell our listeners about the first book that you wrote. After you sent it to me, when you called me this past week and wanted to know if I ever read it, and here I got the book and opened it up, and one of the things, as I said, I've always enjoyed historical novels. Even when I was reading novels, I enjoyed his historical novels, and I got reading that book, and it was very difficult to put down. I had it done in a couple days from reading at night and then waking up in the morning and reading a bit before I got up and couldn't wait to get to bed, because I do my reading usually in bed or early in the morning when I get up. And I sent you an email and said I thought it was, wow, it was amazing. It was like, for me, it was like just reading the details of incidents that are happening today in this world. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I based it that way.
I know you did. And you did a heck of a good job. And one of the thoughts that I had about it, Greg, is that it would be a good book for people to share with their friends, associates, families who like to read. There's, you know, I don't think a lot of people read anymore today. They're more into watching, you know, watching a video.
You're absolutely right.
I'm real sad about that, but to share a book with somebody whose eyes aren't really open, but they read that, and then they compare what was going on, you know, in the book with the situation, and then the way the news was reporting it, that was exquisite. For people to get a glimpse and maybe begin to open some people's eyes while they're being entertained, because it was a novel, but it was based on so much fact.
Well, I will tell you, I went out of my way to be accurate with it. If it wasn't accurate, I didn't use it. For my technical advisors, I used people who knew what they were doing.
Like?
Among my technical advisors, I had a former Special Forces sergeant. I had a former SEAL lieutenant commander. I had a gun dealer. I had a federally licensed anti-terrorism instructor. I had cops. I had firemen. And for the parts dealing with women, I had the ultimate technical advisor. I'd go ask another woman what she thought of this. But I shot for accuracy, and if anything in the book didn't pass muster in the accuracy department, it didn't get put in. And I wrote the book, I'll have to say, Third Revolution. I wrote it primarily for me because it was something I wanted to do. But it kind of took on a life of its own after that. I was going through some major changes health-wise and in my own thinking at the time.
Oh.
And I was, you know, I realized when I became ill, I realized that I had something I had never had in my life, really. Time to really sit down and think. And to look at things and to reevaluate things.
And put things in perspective.
Put things in perspective. Well, let me put it this way. There's nothing like a doctor looking at you and saying that C word, cancer, to make things really clear.
Uh-huh.
It has a wonderfully clarifying effect on the mind. But the book pretty much took on a life of its own almost while I was writing it.
Like I said
in the author's notes, while I'm playing Puppet Master, sometimes I could feel the characters pulling back.
What, say that again?
While I was playing Literary Puppet Master, I could feel the characters pulling back on the strings, wanting me to go another direction.
I can relate. Yes, that's cool.
But it, so far, I've had, of all the people that have read it, that have contacted me, I've had one person who didn't like it.
Really? And did they say why they
didn't? Well, it wasn't that he didn't like it. He said, it's a great book, but why is it so violent?
Oh.
Well, it's about a war. You know, what? I don't believe in glossing things over. Now, I will have to say that I intentionally, the only changes I made for others is I toned down the language a bit from what people would really say. I cut it back quite a bit. I mean, there's some people told me, well, you know, before they'll read the book, you know, does it take God's name in vain? Does it have the infamous F word in it? Well, no, actually it doesn't.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's not intended as a children's book. It has some pretty rough and earthy language in it, but it is not, I guess you'd say, grossly profane, and it's not blasphemous.
Right.
But I've been told by people it's a hard book to read. They get highly, not as in hard to read, but as in emotionally hard to read.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because there are things happen in there that people don't want to think about that happen every day.
Yeah.
And everything in there.
And then the way the news reports it.
That happens every day, too.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, that was one of the really important, because every time there would be an incident, and then the way in the book, the way the news reported, I thought, my God, that's exactly what's happening. Just like today, the Iraqi people, Anytime they take out a family, they say they took out a nest of insurgents.
Mm-hmm.
And the word insurgent, I don't know if I looked it up or not, but I mean, we get the idea of what they're saying, but these are people, even if they were, quote, rebelling over there, fighting back, which many of them are, they're there to protect their families and their country. And, Greg, I got an email sent to me. In fact, it's posted on our website at sweetliberty.org. On the main page, folks, if you haven't been there in a while, it's in the What's New section, also in the Iraq section. But, Greg, this is a young man. His name is Jesse Macbeth. He's an Iraqi veteran. And he's on a video. They went and interviewed him, and it was about 21 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And this boy, and I call him a boy because if he was older than 22, I'd be surprised. He had a little 18-month-old baby at home. And he stood there looking into the camera. He's a black boy. And he's with his camos and things on. He said he wears the uniform because he's speaking out. And unfortunately for him, and at least 200 people that he killed up close and personal, he didn't stop. But he told the real situations that they'd be sent into a home and say, there's insurgents in there. And they would go in and start interrogating the father. It would be a family. You know, maybe 3, 4, 5 children, husband, wife, maybe the grandparents. And they'd start interrogating the father. And if he wasn't answering the way they wanted him to, they just started picking off the family. And he said they'd put the gun barrel right up to their head so they could feel the barrel. And then maybe step back a foot and then shoot them. You talk about up close and personal. These are young little children and innocent women, innocent men, old people, and then they tear the hell out of the place, never find anything. He said, but then the news would report that they took out a nest of insurgents.
The news will report it, and 90% of the people will believe it.
Exactly.
Because not necessarily because they're stupid, but because it's so much easier to believe what you're told than to think for yourself.
He said, we're terrorizing an entire country. We're the terrorists, he said.
Well, I look at it this way when it comes to Iraq. I kind of look at it the same way I look back at the war between states. This is our land, and you're on it. I mean, that's their land. We're over there. They didn't come over here. Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi government had nothing to do with 9/11.
Right.
They didn't even get along. Him and bin Laden didn't even get along, assuming bin Laden is actually the one who was involved in it.
Yes,
that's a big assumption.
Right.
But there was no, it was done. I mean, we went to war for Israel, Shell, and Halliburton, as well as the mountain.
Yes, for Israel.
I named them first.
Right, I noticed that.
I'm looking at the other people.
That are benefiting,
making profits off.
Oh, billions!
It's like the famous military-industrial complex. I mean, when there's a war, it's good for business. Businesses are making record profits now. At the same time, people's wages are dropping, and people will get desperate, and things will start happening. That's why the third revolution is set in a near future depression.
Yeah,
hey, in the collapse in the United States, when we're on the way back down to a third world country.
What's the name of the second book?
The name of the second book is The Long Knives.
The what?
The Long Knives.
The Long Knives. Am I going to get a copy of that book?
Sure.
Okay,
I'll get you one.
You'll remember that.
I'll remember that.
What I might do, I mean, and I maybe, you know, I didn't think to do this with the other one. I've done this before when I'm reading a book mm-hmm. that it's got relevant information in it, even if it's a novel, portion of a novel, because you know that it's based on truth. I'll read it to our listeners. And of course, it's difficult. Well, I couldn't recommend a book, you know, unless I'd read it myself. Mm-hmm. But based on the first book, actually, I really hated it when I got done, and I thought, oh, man, I wonder how long it's going to take him to get number two done. And when I sent you the email that you never got, and I didn't hear from you, I just let it drop. And I'm so sorry that...
Well, I'm sorry I didn't get it. I've had email problems and computer problems.
Yeah, well, haven't we all? I really question whether even half of my emails are making it to their destination.
Well, to be honest, with a wife and five children, there's seven of us using the computer.
Well, I only have me here using the computer.
So it's hard to tell what the problem is most likely.
But so it's called the Long Knives.
The Long Knives.
And it picks up where it picks up
about a month or two after the first book ends.
Okay.
And
maybe what
ends.
I'll do is read the first book again. It's been a while. How long is it? When did you get that published?
The first one? That
yeah.
would be in, I believe it was 2004.
Okay.
I believe
that's
three
years ago.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, that's when I copyrighted it.
Uh-huh.
That's when I copyrighted it. I actually started selling it, I believe it was last year.
Uh-huh.
That's when I actually started selling the book.
Really?
I had it exactly the way I wanted it. And I believe it was 2006. It may have been 2005. I don't. You know, they say the mind's the first thing to go. But this is the Third Revolution is the first in a series of four books.
Okay.
There'll be a total of four leading through the war and the aftermath.
Okay.
And, you know, in case the listeners are wondering, this war does take place in modern times and in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
That's the South, where the South rises again. Not the way most people who write the futuristic novels about it try to portray it. This is gritty, and it takes into account the things that are happening around us even as we speak.
Yes.
The second book, The Long Knives, takes not only, and The Long Knives not only are the hero and heroine, Frank and Samantha, having, you know, still fighting the federal forces, they're also fighting they're caught up in a power struggle between different factions in their own ranks. One side sees them as a threat to be eliminated, and the other one as a pawn to be used.
Uh-huh.
And if you've got it from the first book, the hero Frank Gore doesn't respond real well to that.
Yeah.
But I've...
That was a kind of a neat part where she was a news reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And actually wound up sacrificing her job to play the video that he had. And I, you know, these things, because that's our hope, that there are people that are in positions that can make a difference that are going to come forth. And I know that that's possible. I know with Creator, all things are possible. And I never give up hope.
Well, there's always somebody out there, and if the circumstances of the person come together at the right time, it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you the second book is has a little bit more intensity to it than the first one.
It is.
The first one was fairly intense.
Yeah. They sure kept you reading, though, I'll tell you that.
The second one, the thing is, in the characters I've created, they're not, I try my best not to do two-dimensional characters. Okay, these people they're people. And when they get cut, they hurt, they bleed. And you've got people, like in the second book, you're going to have Samantha, who is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder after her torture by the feds. And by the way, those techniques that we used in the first book were certified as accurate by my special forces contact, who informed me, actually he approved that I'd found the information before, and he approved it. He said, yeah, so that's the same kind of tactics we used, not him particularly, but the U.S. military used in their adventures in South and Central America.
Now, did you have?
I recognize.
Did you? What I wanted to ask you. So they confirmed this, but did this come out of your quote imagination, or had you read about some of these things, or?
Well, the electroshock, I had actually. I'm trying to think. I forget what network did it, but back during. I think it was the El Salvador thing.
Okay.
Back somewhere around that time period, they had an expose on the news of the way they were torturing women in that part of the world, and that's exactly what they were doing.
Wow.
Only thing was they were using cattle prods instead of stun guns like they would be using now because they didn't have them then.
Right.
This is, and you know, like I say, the thing is not in there for titillation. It's in there to show people what happened. And to show people what happens in a modern, quote-unquote, war with, quote-unquote, civilized people.
Civilization.
A lot of the stuff, some of the stuff pulled directly out of what's going on in Iraq, in Afghanistan, at Abu Ghraib, at Guantanamo.
Do you have the...
No doubt the Charleston Naval Base, because they've got a few, they do have a few of detainees down there. In the Charleston Naval Brig.
Really?
Right on the coast of South Carolina.
You know, this it's so, in a sense, it's so surreal. You know, you read about it in the Soviet Union, the torture of people, and but to have it happening by demand of the government that we used to call our government, you know? It's surreal to me that there are people sitting in prisons like
Abu Ghraib, I believe.
Abu Ghraib.
I've heard it pronounced several different times.
Right. Being just totally... I mean... And then it was one of the networks. I don't know if it was CNN or one of the three, ABC, CBS, NBC... actually had a listener or viewers poll to ask them to vote if they felt that it was okay to torture prisoners to get information out of them. I don't know how that vote came out, but even the fact that they are blatant enough to do it, and I would imagine there are sleepers, many, many sleepers who say, of course, do what you have to get the information without even using their gray matter and saying, well, how could you know that what you're getting is truth if you're torturing them?
If you're torturing somebody, they'll try to figure
they'll
out
say
what
anything.
You want to hear, and they'll eventually tell you.
Of course.
You may get some accurate information, and you'll get a lot of stuff that's made up, and so you're no better than what you were before. I think a lot of it is just the way things are done in an exercise in sadism.
Yeah.
I mean, it would take a
sadism,
kind of individual... It would take a different kind of individual to do that to another human being who had never done anything to them personally.
I know it.
You know, I mean, that's... You know, we're not talking about somebody who broke in and killed your family or something. We're talking to some total stranger you've never met and just, hey, I'm going to rip this person apart.
And watch
because them. The government tells me to.
Yep. You know, we've got a piece posted on our website in the children's section.
Mm-hmm.
This was... thing that they did in a college, and it was really phony, but the people didn't know it. They had students take part in this, college students,
mm-hmm.
and they had people allegedly wired up, and the students were supposed to ask them questions, the interrogators.
I read that.
Did you read that, Greg?
Not on your site, but I've read that.
Right.
Before.
It was terrible to think that they were doing this in a college, and these people were screaming in agony, and they were, and the students that were interrogating them really thought they were shocking them, and they kept kept upping the power on them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I keep thinking, as we sow, so shall we reap. That's in my mind so much. And I really wonder, the soul, I had read someplace, I don't know that this is so, but it makes sense to me because I've wondered about these people that go into the military and then they go over and indiscriminately drop bombs and kill hundreds, and then listening to this young boy, and he literally said that there was one time they had bombed some, it wasn't really a bomb shelter, but where they were all, you know, trying to protect, you know, go to for protection. And they would go in there, they were sent in there and said, anybody that's left alive, take them out. He said there would be people in there that may be hiding behind a wall or something, you know, because it was subterranean, where they actually made it through alive. And he said some of them had very minor injuries. And he said we had to just kill them. We had to just kill them, see.
The thing is, to my mind, is you don't have to
of course,
just do it. Because what are they going to do? Send you to Iraq or Afghanistan?
Greg,
that's the question.
He was in Iraq.
Let me ask you this: is there a real difference? I mean, you know, we say these people are terrorists. These people are the good guys. Okay, tell me what's the difference between somebody for one particular cause who carries a bomb into a building and somebody else who pushes a button and drops one on
exactly.
it 10,000 feet up?
Exactly.
War is terrorism. It's killing the other side, tearing their stuff up, and making them afraid you'll keep doing it. All
that's what, you know, he said. He said they were told that they had to put the fear of God in the Iraqi people.
Looks like the Iraqis have been put into fear of God.
Well,
in the meantime,
this boy said that he said he would guesstimate, but at least 200 people that he personally, up close and personal, not from dropping a bomb, but one at a time shooting innocent people. One time it was a baby of about a year old.
They used to call that war crimes.
Exactly. Well, that depends. Now we know, you know. But he said that one time they went in this place, and he said there was a woman sitting there, and she had her two children, I think two of them, holding them, and her hands were all bloody because one of the children had been injured, and she was crying and begging him, please, save me, please. And he said, I shot them all. He said it just like that. I shot them all. While the woman was begging for her and her children's lives, 200 people. Times that by 200 or 500 or 1,000 or 10,000. How many people and what happens to their souls? Greg, we're almost out of time here. Let our listeners know how they can get your book. Do you have a website? Hurry up.
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Okay.
geocities.com/thethirdrevolution. geocities.com/thethirdrevolution.
The third revolution.
The third revolution.
And all written out.
I
am so sorry that, geez, my clock looks like it's running a couple minutes slow. Folks, geocities.com/The Third Revolution. If you're interested in getting Greg's book and making sure that you know when his second one is due out, the 20th of this month. Greg, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jackie.
Yeah, and folks, we'll see you next Wednesday. Have a lovely week and bless you all. Good night, folks. Good night, Greg.
Good night.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey